G'day and welcome back to Convergently Speaking. Today on the show we have a really interesting guest for you, Dr. Tracy Kemble, who will be discussing her newest book, Narctionary. Hi, Dr. Tracy, and welcome to Convergently Speaking. Really excited to have you here. Your new book and your work in general is really fascinating, and yeah, it's exciting to talk to you today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I always love jumping on programs like this of empowerment and transformation and seeing where we can take the audience as well as ourselves during this valuable time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't you tell myself and the audience a bit about who you are, what you do, or whatever feels important to share?
So my name is Dr. Tracy. I've been in the world of transformation and empowerment for over 30 years. I'm known as the Feminine Boss Self-Love Recovery Coach. And okay. That's because I work with women. The Feminine Boss is an online academy, educational academy, where I teach women how to become the boss of their bee and their business. And I do that all working with feminine energy, with the roadmap of getting closer and closer to this amazing thing called self-love. The reason that's important in working with women is research shows that 70% of women don't understand the concept of self-love. And so it's a matter of an educational, and it's a lifeline journey that we all need, but especially I believe that women leave. Because of my history, because of my trauma, I'm also an abuse recovery expert specializing in narcissistic abuse recovery.
Oh, how fascinating. So you're saying a lot of people don't understand self-love. Can you give us a bit of an explanation as to how you see that and how you come at that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when people think about self-love, like if I were to ask you, hey, Dan, what is your definition of self-love? A lot of times people will say, you know, it's how you feel about yourself or what you think about yourself, the value that you have towards yourself. And these are all elements of self-love. The way that I describe self-love is I describe it as the conscious relationship I choose to have with myself, living mindful, living present, living to the authentic self. Having a sense of self-love means building a steely foundation under your emotional feet so that when life rocks and rolls, you don't rock and roll. You know, that you remain that steady source that we need to be. The way that I describe self-love visually is I said self-love looks like a boardwalk. You know how boardwalk has side-by-side planks?
Yep.
Self-love is the same thing in that it's a series of planks that when we lay them side by side by side by side, we create that steely foundation of self-love. If we had just one plank, we would walk like a tightrope mm-hmm. in life, right? But instead, if we have these series of planks that we have that foundation, we can begin to dance through life and enjoy life and run and experience life to its fullest. And so self-love isn't, you know, a plank isn't how I feel about myself, right? That's not a plank self-love. A plank of self-love is judging myself fairly, you know, because people who lack in self-love, they don't judge themselves fairly. They don't have a clear read on themselves. A plank in the self-love foundation is reciprocity. Being in relationships that there is a give and a take. You're not just the taker and you're not just the giver. A plank in the self-love foundation is knowing where your home base is. We all need something that is a home base in life. We need to know where we can slide into and we have that safety. It's your first voice. It's your non-negotiables. You know, like what's a non-negotiable? Well, you know, for me, one of my non-negotiables is self-love is a non-negotiable. It's not a me sacrificing myself to awful thoughts or to another person is not a negotiable point. So this is what self-love is. And all of my programs of empowerment lead to helping build that foundation of self-love. Because if we have that, we have all the tools we need in life to figure things out mm-hmm. along the journey.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I like that metaphor of the planks. That makes a lot of sense. So for those listening along, I'm wondering if people may be sitting here going, well, self-love, where's the cutoff point between, let's say, narcissism and self-love? And I know narcissism is, you know, we'll get to your new book on the topic, but, you know, how do you see that as different? Because obviously they are different. I'm not suggesting that they're not, but is that a question you get? And how do you...
I get that a lot. And actually, one of the very first people that asked me about it is somebody that struggles with narcissism. They're like, I'm not sure if I'm comfortable taking a class on self-love. And I'm like, well, the difference between having authentic self-love, those of us who are operating in healthy measures, we have self-love. We're narcissists, are self-lovers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love thyself. A narcissist is in love with thyself. Kind of, because there's also that intense self-loathing, but it takes a while for them to dig deep enough to find that that's the root of their behavior.
Oh, I love that answer. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Superficially, it looks like they're in love with themselves, but as you say, once you go deeper, that's a great answer. Yeah, so loving yourself versus being in love with yourself.
Exactly.
Well, let's go there. Tell us something about your book. Now, I want to say it right. It's just called Narctionary. Am I saying
just
it right?
Just like dictionary, only yes. Narctionary. Yeah.
It's a clever title. Did you come up with that?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
Oh,
because it kind of just describes it. It's a dictionary for anyone faced with narcissism, narcissistic abuse trauma, and most important, narcissistic abuse recovery.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I know from myself, you know, being a therapist, growing up in a house where I had two social workers for parents, I always had this high empathy, care for others type of thing built in. And so it's made me vulnerable to attracting or being attracted to narcissists.
Yeah.
And I don't think I've ever been in a romantic relationship with one, but I've certainly have had friendships with people that are on that, you know, on
spectrum.
That continuum, and maybe could even be diagnosed. And so, you know, it's been my own growth journey around codependency and learning boundaries and all that. So the idea of having a book for the language that's used, because there's so much jargon once you start to touch onto this area.
Yeah,
tell us a little bit about the book and.
So the book, I'll give you a brief description, then I'll share with you how it came about. And I think that will answer a lot of questions. So the book is called Narctionary, and it is the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Dictionary. And it has over 350 words and terms that are related to, again, narcissism, narcissistic abuse, narcissistic trauma, and narcissistic recovery. And the way that the book came about was, it was about 9 months ago. And a girlfriend of mine who I knew she was with a narcissist, she called me and she was just on the floor and she was crying. And what happened? Well, her husband, who was a very wealthy, powerful man, they were married 12 years. And he come home one day after a conference. He's like, that's it. We're done. Gone.
Wow.
And she was devastated. And she's like, I don't know what happened. I know that you deal with this world of what's happening. I said, well, you just experienced the third phase of the narcissistic abuse cycle, which is called the discard. And she goes, what's the discard? And I said, the discard is when a narcissist throws you out like trash. They're done with you. They've gotten all the fuel out of you. And they're moving on to something new. Complete silence on the other phone. She's like, oh, my God, that's exactly what happened. And after that, she said, well, the worst part about it is that, you know, everything was fine until one day it wasn't. And no matter what I did, it's like one day he'd love me, one day he wouldn't. And I would say, well, yeah, that's either called the adore to abhor cycle or the hurt to rescue cycle. And it happens in the phase two of the narcissistic cycle, which is in the degradation stage. And she's like, What is the hurt to rescue cycle? And I said, the hurt to rescue cycle is when a narcissist will push you down to pull you up, to push you down to pull you up. And the adore to abhor is when one day they love you, one day they don't. One day they love you, one day they don't. It's a form of love segmenting. What's love segmenting? When a person only loves part of you, but never you in full, you know? And so the conversation ended up, it would be so frustrating because whenever I would try to talk about it, the end result would be a conversation that would go nowhere and I would just be as confused as when we started. And I said, oh, that's because you were word salad. She goes, what's a word salad? And I said, word salad is when the narcissist will take so many words and jumble them all up to leave you confused so that nothing ever gets resolved, because the narcissist can't have resolve, because if there's resolve, there's peace, and they can't have peace because they need fuel. So, and she goes, oh my God, Tracy, I wish that you would just take all these words and put it in a book so we newbies can really get a grasp on what we're dealing with here. And I literally grabbed my phone that next week, because on my recovery journey, I started this one random file that a word salad, what is that? And I had such a hard time remembering all this new vocabulary that it was right there. I pulled it together. I not only alphabetized it, but I categorized it so that people can know what type of a word is it. Is it a trauma word? Is it an abuse word? Is it a recovery word? And then at the end of the book, I have a self-assessment test where the more you check means the more you're suffering from this area, or if it's in the world of recovery, the more you're deeper into your recovery.
Ah, fantastic. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, trying to explain these terms. I wonder again for my listeners, because I haven't actually talked about narcissism. I don't think we've ever talked about it on the show. I've personally, as a therapist, I've looked into it quite a bit, but this idea of fuel, I wonder if you could expand on
what it is. Imagine that the narcissistic personality is like a cell phone battery, and that they need constant infusion. And the reason that it's called fuel is because it literally ignites them and it keeps them operating. Just like gas is fuel for a car, our reactions and attention to the narcissist is what fuels them. They are like a cell phone battery in that if they are not getting this constant infusion of fuel, that they begin to feel like they're going to disappear and evaporate and die. And so this is why they have to live in constant drama. This is why they will either overwhelm you with attention so that you're enamored with them, or they will abuse you to the point that you're at tears, because all of it is just, they're just looking for the reaction, and that reaction turns into fuel.
They actually can't generate that self-love internally because of their own early lack of development of their personality, as I understand it. So they need constant external validation, constant external input. And in the case of your friend's story, once they'd gotten all they could, they then just ended it.
Yeah, because they're bored and they need a new source of supply to feel alive.
Yeah. So how do you see the book functioning? Is it people use the book when they discover that they're in a narcissistic relationship?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. I've had several different responses. So one of the responses is, you know, people grab a hold of the book and they're like, oh my God, thank you. And I'll grab my book really quickly right here. Like, oh, thank you. And the new person who's being diagnosed will literally go through it and just try to find answers to what they're going through. And I dedicated the book to my mom because my mom taught me this amazing tool when I was young. And she used to say, Tracy, when we are in pain and our pain doesn't have a name, it's like fighting a ghost, and that we can't grab a hold of it and pull it into our life and love it and mend it, or if it doesn't best serve us, get rid of it. But when it has a name, we're able to grab a hold of that, bring it close to our life, hold on to it, mend it, heal it, or, hey, no, and push it out of our life. So Narctionary is all about giving name to the many ghosts of narcissism. You can give vocabulary to it so that when you're dealing with it, you're not fighting a ghost. You're able to say, hey, stop word salading me. If you're not going to have a clear conversation, let's just end the conversation. And it just gives you that power, that foundation that you need to be able to manage your own life. People who are not involved in a narcissistic relationship, I was out the other day and there was a lady there, and she says, oh, Dr. Tracy, I just bought your new book. And I'm like, oh, thank you. And she said, well, I'm personally not, you know, my relationship with my significant other, it is not a narcissistic relationship. She said, but however, I have gone through this book A to Z. And what it's allowed me to do is to look at my surrounding life and be like, oh, that person's doing this. Oh, that person's doing that. Because narcissism isn't just your significant other. It could be a parent, it could be a child, it could be a best friend, it could be an acquaintance, it could be your boss, it could be just a variety of people that you have to coexist with, and you need to know how to handle them so they don't usurp you and bring you down.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There's a guy that I've followed his podcast a bit, and he talks about how in parts of our society, we're actually valuing personality disordered values. And so we have these parts of our society, and as you're saying, friends, bosses, that actually put on a pedestal this way of operating. You know, only think about yourself, be ruthless, and just essentially use people for your own ends. Use your own emotions to manipulate them, and so on and so forth. And so I think when people think of narcissism, yeah, they just think of their significant other. But in society, there's always a percentage of people that are going to be narcissists. And so we're all going to meet them. And it's great to have our eyes open, I suppose, to those tactics and to those mechanisms. And then to be able to name that ghost. I really like that. I actually had that quote from you that you quote. I had that written down and I thought, oh, I'm going to mention this quote because it's a really helpful way of looking at it. And so how have you seen this play out as people have begun to get the language for these ghosts? How does that play out for people? I'm guessing it's empowering for them, number one.
It is. I've been running a recovery program. It's called Reclaiming Me, and we've been doing it for 25, 30 years. We've never missed a week of sessions, and it runs 2 times a week. And within that program, the students, the clientele, they're learning this whole language of narcissism. And so this is like really a crash course to learning it. And I tell you, when I was in the depth of my pain, you know, when I first went into recovery for myself, is I walked into the therapist's office, and as all we therapists do, right? Why are you here?
Yes.
And the only thing that I could say was, I feel invisible and my mind feels like mush.
Mm.
And that was just after the years of the mental trauma of living with the gaslighting and whatnot of a narcissist. And so when my pain, as my mother always says, when my pain began to get a name, this is called narcissistic abuse. What? This is called narcissistic abuse trauma. What? You have CPTSD trauma. What? You know, and when suddenly things began to get a name, and I'm getting a visual download right now, I'm seeing a beautiful graffiti wall being painted around me. Is that that's what happens, is that you're looking at just there's nothing there that you can clearly see. And then when these things start to get a name, this picture of what you're living in the middle starts to get clearer and clearer and clearer. And then with all that new knowledge, you're able to make decisions for your life to be able to reclaim your life, which is the name of my program, Reclaiming Me.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. And so what does your program involve?
So my program is called Reclaiming Me, and it's about the journey from narcissistic abuse to self-love. And the reason that I use that roadmap is it's the roadmap that saved my life. Mm. But primarily because in the world of, and I'm sure that you know this as a therapist, in the world of narcissism is a spectrum disorder.
Sure.
Which means that it goes from here to here, okay? And so it's not like pregnancy where maybe you are or you're not.
Yep.
We can all have elements of narcissism in us. So right here in the middle is what's called healthy narcissism. And healthy narcissism is what we all need to keep the good in and the bad out. Hey, no, you're not going to destroy my life today. It doesn't work that way. As it moves on up the scale, it then merges into narcissistic characteristics. And narcissistic characteristics are just very difficult, exhausting people. As it moves on up the scale, it then goes into narcissistic personality disorder, which are very problematic people. As it moves on up the scale, then goes into antisocial personality disorder, formerly known as sociopath and psychopath. And these are very dangerous people that we just need to stay away from. Well, one day on my recovery journey, because I was that classic narcissistic abuse trauma victim where once it got a name, you could not get me off of YouTube, listening for hours and hours and hours, reading every book that was out there. And though I did make a lot of progress, certain parts of me, I could feel it were not being repaired from the inside. So I had all this head knowledge, but this was still broken. So one day when I was thinking about this spectrum, I had what I consider just a divine thought. And it said, I've been spending all of my energy focusing on the person and the process and whatnot. What if I shifted my focus and rather than focused on the narcissism, I instead focused on my self-love foundation? And so I began this amazing journey where I just said, you know what? As God is my witness, I'm going to build this foundation under me. And what is this thing that's eluding me my whole life? I was terrified of it because I was raised with a narcissistic environment and then I continued to just do normal the rest of my life. So the concept of loving myself was like, if loving yourself looks like narcissism, I don't want it. That sounds dangerous to me. So I was really stuck in this wrong programming.
Yep.
So I just began this amazing journey to discovering what self-love is. And so what the classes do, it's a one-year curriculum. And it meets weekly, and there are 6 modules in the program. And every week, all we're doing is we're laying down something that happens within the world of narcissism, giving that particular element a name, and then handing you a self-love plank, explaining how if you implement the self-love plank, that won't happen. And there are 6 modules in the program. The first module is called What Is This? And it's all about explaining what is narcissism, really giving name to narcissism, narcissistic abuse, narcissistic trauma, etc., etc. The second module is called What Happened to Me? And I've identified about 13 of the most common shenanigans, or you can call them abuses, mm-hmm. that the narcissist uses against the victim. What those look like and how you have been traumatized because of it and what self-love plank you can use to heal the trauma, which will disalign you with the narcissism. The third course is called Love and the Narcissist. And this is a course that, you know, in the second module, we do all the outside work, them. On the third module, it's really important, Love and the Narcissist. And now we're going inside. Mm-hmm. And I start examining the questions. Why was the narcissist drawn to me? You know, going Brilliant. Into empathy work. The flip side of that, why was I drawn to the narcissist, codependent work? And why is it that when all the warning signs said, no, don't do this, I not only walked but ran back for more. Love addiction work, trauma bond work. And then we even go deep into the spiritual bond that takes place within a narcissistic relationship and learning how to cut those tethered emotional strings that we have. The module after that, we're specifically working on the trauma wounds of CPTSD, which is a very specific trauma wound experienced by a narcissistic abuse victim. The module after that is called When No Contact's Not an Option, because mm-hmm. people would love to tell you, just leave and never look back. But that's not always possible. You may work with a narcissist. You may co-parent with a narcissist. So you need to learn how to protect yourself in the world of narcissism because it's not going away. And the final module is called Life After Narcissistic Abuse. And it's about learning how to love again and trust again and dream again and rebuild your life on a whole new foundation that will lead you away from narcissism rather than to it.
Wow, I love that. It's such a brilliant overview. And especially the comment that you made is, why did I attract this person and going into that? And I'm often working with my couples around that type of thing. It's like, oh, I've recreated a relationship with my partner that mirrors my family of origin. And that's not always bad. Sometimes there's good stuff, but there's also dysfunctional stuff. And to try and actually explore why, especially for those that I work with that decide that they're going to separate, you know, and maybe often I'll end up working with just one, that the one person will continue to come. It's like, okay, let's talk about how come you wanted to date and get into a relationship with someone like this. And let's, like you were saying, you know, there's this sort of unconscious and we want to become conscious of that to actually not repeat the same mistakes. I love that you've got that in the course. I was thinking where to go next, you know, with our discussion, and probably an obvious thing for me to ask for those that are listening along that maybe tune into my podcast for a range of reasons not to do with narcissism. If someone's listening along and they're starting to think, am I in a narcissistic relationship, or is my boss a narcissist, or so on and so forth, I wonder if you could share a few of the, you know, telltale signs or telltale symptoms. And I think you've touched on a few of these already, but that someone could look out for in their life to help them determine.
That's a really good question. You know, the difficulty with narcissism is that, first off, it's on a spectrum disorder. So if you're dealing with somebody that has narcissistic characteristics, they'll go benign for a while. And you'll start to be like, oh, maybe I'm imagining things. Maybe it's really not that bad. And then when they slip back in, you're like, oh, no, there it is. I can give you these, like, some clinical descriptions and whatnot, but I prefer to give more emotional descriptions.
Yeah, sure.
You know that when you're in a narcissistic relationship, when you have a lot of fights over nothing, when there is such disruption and you're not quite sure exactly why this chronic disruption continues to happen. You know you're in a narcissistic relationship when you are with somebody that you don't have the freedom to express your point of view, regardless of what that point of view is, without a dramatic outcome. If it aligns with that person, life is good. If it doesn't align with that person, there's hell to pay. That's a very narcissistic warning sign. You know that you have met a narcissist when somebody meets you and they are absolutely enamored with you and they come in hot and fast to try to get you to fall in love with them. When you're in a relationship with a narcissist, we fall in love for love. They fall in love for fuel. And so what will happen is that as you lean more and more into the relationship, you'll find that at first you guys will be like this. And rather than growing closer, you'll start to feel that person pulling away. And there will be more and more and more of a distance. You know, when you're in a narcissistic relationship, when somebody loves you one day and the next day doesn't, meaning who's walking to the door today? Who are you waking up to today? When you see them harshly judging your family or your friends as though their way of life is right and other people's ways of life is wrong. And there's nothing wrong with a spouse saying, you know, I'm not comfortable with that. But love wouldn't stop you from being with the people or trying to convince you otherwise. Because narcissists, another sign is they're campaigners. That if they want something, they will just campaign and campaign and campaign and campaign until they get you to say yes.
Yeah, and that would probably be part of the strategy they often use around isolation as well, I'm guessing. So cutting you off from those that are your support line so that they can maintain control and maintain your focus, your attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. True. Do you have a book in front of you? No. So let's open it up. Choose a letter.
All right. Letter L.
Let's go into L. All right. And you know what's really fun is I love to do this. Okay. I'm just going to name off some of the L words and you stop me and we'll discuss it. Okay.
Okay.
Learned helplessness. Linen cupboard syndrome. Lost child syndrome.
Oh, I want to do linen cupboard syndrome. I don't know what that means.
The linen cupboard syndrome. All right. A linen cupboard syndrome is a term related to trauma memories where the victim can only see emotional clutter when trying to remember what happened. An example of the linen cupboard syndrome is due to the abuse and due to something called CPTSD, which is complex post-trauma stress disorder. The difference between complex post-trauma stress disorder and PTSD, post-trauma stress disorder is, and I'll use an example of a friend of ours. A friend of ours was at the Las Vegas shootings several years ago. She has post-trauma stress disorder from the event. In her recovery, when she gets anxious and overwhelmed and all those feelings come on, she's empowered enough to be able to say, wait, on such and such day, at such and such time, I was minding my business, random shots went out, I was hit with shrapnel. And so she's able to go exactly to that place of trauma and begin pulling herself out of it and walking herself through it. Well, in the world of narcissistic abuse, trauma is many times a day, many explosions, the gaslighting. I mean, there's so many things. So what will happen is it's a twofold thing. Something called abuse amnesia happens. And one form of abuse amnesia is when the narcissist conveniently forgets anything wrong that they've done.
Yep.
But in regards to the victim, a form of abuse amnesia is literally, if you talk to trauma victims that were in a car accident, let's say, and they will say, do you remember the impact? Most of them will say, I don't remember anything. I remember driving down the street and the rest is blank. Well, you know, that is our brain protecting ourselves against remembering that trauma. Well, when we get bombarded and bombed and bombed and bombed and bombed, we will experience certain elements of that amnesia. And because all of our traumas, if you get 10 a day, multiply that times 365 days a year, that's a lot of bombs that you've taken. And so what happens is that the trauma victim, and I've seen this in therapy, and I'm sure you have as well. Well, the narcissist will say, tell me exactly what I've done. Tell me exactly what I've done. And they will look there with a blank face like, well, okay, you were yelling. What was I yelling about? And the amnesia is there. You cannot remember the exact trauma. And so what happens is that, this is where the Lennon Cupboard Syndrome comes in, is that when you ask the victim of narcissistic abuse, you know, to tell me about your relationship, it's literally like opening that cupboard and it's just being a mess. And you're just like, it's just a mess. Don't ask me to name every box that's turned over and what's inside the boxes. And because I mentally cannot make sense of all this mess. So that's,
yeah. Yeah. No, that does make sense. You know, there's this phenomenon of the narcissist saying, what did I do? How did I do it? What did I say? And so often the things that are being done are quite intangible. And when you try and articulate them, when you try and say them out loud, they either sound petty or they don't really sound like anything at all. And yet for the person who was there, at an energetic level, they could feel something's not quite right. And so you end up with this disconnection between, you know, the head and the heart almost. It's like at a gut heart level, I know something's not right. But when I analyze it, it's like, you know, he only did this or she only did this. And especially as you say, like gaslighting, the word you used earlier, if there's some gaslighting on top of it, then I suppose that just exacerbates that dynamic. It's like, yeah. Well, he or she's telling me that there's not really an issue here. So I must be making it, I must be exaggerating.
You know what's interesting about recovering, and this is something really, really important to know, is that part of CPTSD and the reason that I'm so committed in my program to specifically working on CPTSD trauma is because you can't heal from it if you don't treat this. Now, you mentioned something, and I speak from personal experience, that so I'm in this abusive relationship, and now we're at the therapist, and now we're going to be talking about the trauma or the dysfunctions that are being done. And you hear yourself saying something, and you're like, this is so, as you said, this is so petty, what's coming out of my mouth, why in the world does this affect me so bad? And the reason that it affects you, and it's part of the CPTSD, is that narcissistic abuse it's a form of emotional and mental trauma that almost like alcoholism, that if an alcoholic gets sober, right, and they begin to drink again, they won't start drinking here. They'll go drink, and they'll drop to their lowest, most chaotic point and disintegrate from there. Well, it's the same thing with narcissistic trauma wounds, is that if I punch you once like this, you're not going to have a mark. Second time, okay, that's stinging. Third, fourth, fifth, yeah. Sixth time. So what happens is that this trauma wound is going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And the slightest thing that the narcissist does, it's not touching you at a superficial level. It's hitting that deeply entrenched trauma wound. And that's why the overreaction is there. And that's why it feels so traumatic to the victim, because it's not a superficial wound. They're punching up against an internal trauma wound that is deeply entrenched in the pain levels of our life.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it makes me think of developmental trauma. So like when you have a child who throughout their entire upbringing had an emotionally or maybe too emotionally absent parents. Mm-hmm. And so the parents may have provided food and shelter, may have provided in the external world everything that was needed, but this really insidious dynamic is at work where they weren't shown affection, they weren't hugged, they weren't told that they were loved, they weren't encouraged, and these types of things. And the understanding of this is that that creates much more significant trauma than the child that grew up in a generally happy and healthy family where once in a while one of the parents maybe got really angry, and I'm not saying this is good at all, but you know, got really angry and hit them or swore at them or yelled at them, but on a day-to-day basis, you know, the family environment was reasonably caring and loving. And this is something I've noticed working with people, that the first example is so hard to notice because you can't see what didn't happen. But it's easy to remember what did happen. Oh, this one day my dad, blah, 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 you know. And it sounds like that's sort of quite similar to what you're talking about, but more in an adult context. Of course, it can happen to kids as well, but the day-to-day slow little nicks, slow little slights against your sense of self-esteem and identity.
And that's a really good way to put it, because in the beginning of the Module 2 class, you know, I open up with certain teachings again and again for it to go to here. And one of the things that I teach again and again during this segment of the program is narcissism is a technique where the narcissist will chip away at your thoughts and your beliefs and your needs, chip by chip by chip by chip by chip, until you end up retreated in the corner with about this much of you left and no personal territory space. Recovery is simply about learning how to pick up the pieces of yourself that were chipped away by another person, and without apology, taking up the rightful space that is yours. So it's really about just reclaiming the pieces of your life, because nobody has the right to chip away your life. Nobody. But people can't unless we allow them that power.
Yeah, absolutely. What a fantastic comment. A few years ago now, when I was still in Australia, I was working, it's hard to contextualize, but I was working with a number of people with mental health issues. It was a government-funded program. And I recall a client that I was due to go see, and I was given a bit of background knowledge on this person, and I thought, oh, this is the type of person that's going to try and cling on to me in this codependent way. And this really showed the fruit of my own healing, because I was able to go in there and not buy into this person's drama, so this was a middle-aged lady who had two adult children and neither adult children would talk to her. And so I thought, well, this is interesting. You know, these are just the children, right? There's got to be a reason that both children have decided not to talk to this lady. And so I didn't let her pull me into her drama and pull me into her complaining. And, you know, I was empathetic and I was caring and helpful, but I didn't get kind of caught into it. And that was the first client I ever had that didn't want me back. my boss said, this lady doesn't want you to return. And that we had no conflict, but at some energetic level, she knew she wasn't going to be able to pull me in to just be her, whatever word you want to use, you know, to just dump on me. Because I was more than happy to work with her and try and help her move forward, but that wasn't what she was looking for. And that's a profound thing to experience.
And that's a form of actually covert narcissism.
For sure, for sure.
You know, and for those of you who don't know what a covert narcissist is, narcissism, there's about 9 different types of narcissism out there. You know, there's the malignant narcissist, there's the cerebral narcissist, there's the altruistic narcissist, there's a vulnerable narcissist, there's also the covert narcissist. And a covert narcissist is somebody who is just the perpetual victim, that they all, whenever you're with them, all they're talking about is themselves and their woes, and they have the worst day and they have the worst this, and they're just, there's no space for anything else in life except for their traumas. And they are truly, truly the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yes. Yes. Well put. I've definitely met some of those, or at least, again, on the spectrum.
On the
definitely.
Spectrum.
Definitely. Well, I'd like to do another word. Can we pick another letter?
We can. You want to do it by page or you want to do it by letter?
I want to do it by letter again. Let's okay. go W.
W. All right. Here we go. Are you ready?
Okay.
Let me go through them all and then you can decide, okay?
Okay, okay.
Walking on eggshells, weaponizing, wife abandonment syndrome, white knight narcissist. There's another narcissist.
Yeah.
Withholding, woodpeckering, word salad.
Well, you've talked about word salad a little bit already. I think I'm going to go with woodpeckering.
Woodpeckering. Okay. Woodpeckering, an abuse technique where the narcissist will relentlessly poke and prod at the victim until they find the victim's tender spot and he or she will be brought to tears or anguish. The purpose of woodpeckering is to extract fuel from the victim. And the example that I give is most victims break down because of the relentless woodpeckering of the narcissist that chips away at their sanity.
Wow. And what does breakdown look like? What does that look after a period of woodpecking?
It can look like a nervous breakdown. It can look like a give in. Like, okay, fine. Just do what you want.
Yeah.
You know, because they just like, and you know, my father-in-law, God rest his soul, he was an attorney and he had a saying, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. And that's so good, you know, when practicing law, but when you are with a narcissist and they begin to do, you know, just the woodpeckering, it's like, this is what they get a need. They're not going to take no for an answer. And that's another thing going back. How do you recognize a potential narcissist? They don't take no for an answer. Somebody who loves you you'll say, no, I don't really agree with that. And they'll make space for it. Well, it's not like, how dare you not agree with this? And there's a fight. It's, oh, well, why don't you agree with it? Let me know you more, because maybe I also have something to learn. The narcissist's brain doesn't go there. And woodpeckering, when somebody just will not quit campaigning you to the point that you feel insane.
Yeah, so it's a relentless pursuit of their own needs.
Yeah.
And as you said, you know, that's not love.
It's not love.
And it's hard to see it when you're in it. Yeah.
Narcissism is, you know, one of the descriptions of a narcissist is a very, very immature person. Mm. And if you take a look at, you mentioned that you have 3 kids. And if you take a look at a 2 or a 3-year-old, they're very narcissistic. Me, right? And that's just a stage of life that we all go through at that age. Well, one of the things that a child at that age will do is they won't stop. If they want something, they will woodpecker you. And it's tolerable in children because we understand their brain is growing and they're testing the limits of life. It's not acceptable for an adult to woodpecker.
Yes, that's right. We can contextualize it. And I understand it's around 7 or 8 years of age. And I learned this when my kids were small and I needed to know when the light at the end of the tunnel was coming, that at around 7 or 8 years of age, they start to be able to move out from this. It's healthy narcissism. It's healthy meant narcissism. To be that way, and then to nurture. And our eldest is now 10 and starting to see that more empathy and being able to, yeah, care about others coming online.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, why don't I tell you guys where everybody can either find the book or join the program?
Yep, and what perfect. That's what I was thinking of going to next. So we're on track.
So the book, it's called Narctionary, and it's available on Amazon.com. And it's really a great book. I'm very proud of my work, and I'm more proud of how easy it is to give name to the many ghosts of narcissism. My recovery program is called Reclaiming Me. And if you want, visit drtracy.tv. You can take a look at the Reclaiming Me program. Anyone who comes, mention this show, and you can be a guest for the first time for free. And after that, the classes are only $10 each. And the reason that they're so affordable is because it's my heart and passion to really help people heal from the trauma of narcissistic abuse. And therapy can be very expensive. And, you know, it's one thing I was chatting in an interview yesterday with another group of therapists. And I said, you know, it's one thing for me to say, you know, I want to take a class and learn how to grow my brand. And, you know, well, for 10 sessions, it's going to be, you know, $1,500 or whatever it is. And I should have to pay that. It's my continued education. But if somebody's holding on to their sanity and they need help and they can't afford one-to-one therapy, these are group classes. They're only $10 each. And it's amazing recovery. We've been doing it for almost 30 years, and we're there every Tuesday and Wednesday night. We never miss a week.
That's fantastic. And I've been thinking along the same lines with, yeah, working with couples and trying to look at more group stuff. And I'm actually now running an in-person group in that way, because as you say, yeah, it is expensive to go one-to-one, but it's not also just that. As I'm sure you're very, very aware, there's a different type of healing that can happen when there's others.
Yeah.
It's both are valid, both are helpful. But yeah, working, being in a group setting, being with others who get it, who are going through the same type of things.
And especially in narcissistic abuse recovery, because you're so embarrassed by what you've gone through. You're convinced you're the only person who has ever tolerated this embarrassing nonsense. And when you walk in and there's a room full of people who look at you with compassion instead of disgust or, you know, you're crazy or you're weak, but instead like, come on, I got you. I was there. You know, it just makes such a difference, because it helps restore your dignity.
Absolutely. And the thing I've also noticed is that no one is invulnerable. You know, there's so many successful people in life that realize I'm in a relationship with a narcissist, and the shame that there comes is like, oh, I'm so successful in this area of my life. Why did I get this wrong? And, you know, so much of this comes back to our early childhood programming that we don't realize how we've been primed to get into these type of relationships.
Well, I'll share a really quick story, and I know that we're out of time after this, but you had mentioned something earlier about doing our parents' work. And I had a very epiphanic moment one time in my therapy, in that I had a dream. And in my dream, I was sitting around my coffee table at my house. And I looked around the table, and it was my mother, my father, and my significant other, the few important people in my life. And I looked around the table, and in front of me, there were a stack of books up to here, right? And began to look at the table, and one person had a magazine, another person had maybe two books, somebody had no books in front of them. And I woke up from that dream, and I was like, what was that? Because it really disturbed me. And as I just kind of settled in, and I've done a lot of dream work and whatnot,
yeah.
That represents, all of a sudden I said, what that represents is I'm doing everybody's work in this family. I'm doing everybody's work. I'm doing my mother's work towards my father. I'm doing my sister's work towards, I'm doing everybody's work. And that was like a real epiphanic moment where I said, I'm not going to do other people's work. I'm going to do my work.
Yes.
And my healing really took off after that.
Yes, yes. I like this language of being an emotional dialysis machine. So those of us that grew up in an abusive situation, different scenarios cause this to happen, that we take on other people's emotions for them. We clean them up, we sort them out, and then we give it back. And then those people go, well, that makes my life easy. I don't have to do my own work. Uh-huh. And I know in my own early 20s, in a misguided way, I would do that for friends. I would do that for people. Oh, I'll help you. I'll take on all your emotions and I'll sort it out. And then it's this disempowering dynamics. I always say you don't want to be more committed to a person's problems than what they are.
Exactly.
That's a recipe for burnout.
Well said. Well said.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. This has been really fun and really interesting. And I'm sure my listeners will enjoy this too. And I'm definitely going to get a copy of your book. I'd like to have that as a reference. And it was lovely to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me on your show. And keep up the good work, because the work is good.
So thanks everyone for listening in today. And I hope you enjoyed the interview. I thought it was a really fascinating conversation, looking at all the different language that can be used to understand the world of narcissists and narcissism. I just wanted to take a minute or two to talk to you about the future of the Convergently Speaking podcast. For those new and old listeners, firstly, I want to say thanks for your support. It's been really fun to see listener numbers going up and also receiving feedback from various people over the last few years. The reality is, since moving from Australia to the US, Caitlin and my life has become much busier, at least for the time being, as we're trying to navigate so many new things, making new connections, re-establishing my counselling business, learning the culture and the mores of Minnesota and the US as a whole. And as a result, we've gotten to the point where it feels like to be able to justify continuing to run the podcast with the amount of effort and energy that it takes, we need to take it to the next level. I've always enjoyed running the podcast and that has never changed. And so rather than wrapping things up and investing the time into, you know, the many other competing priorities, I'm really keen to level up the podcast. I'm keen to see it grow and I'm keen to see it ultimately be a part of how I make my living and to see it continue to be a resource for people. So if you do enjoy the show, if you found value in it, or maybe there's a particular episode that spoke to you, I just ask that you consider sharing it with someone. In addition, you can of course subscribe on whichever podcast platform you're using. We do have a YouTube channel that we're aiming to start using a bit more frequently. And of course, on Apple Podcasts, you can leave a rating and a review, which helps us out a lot. And then lastly, if you are in a time of your life where you're struggling in your marriage, you're struggling in your romantic relationship, the main thing I do day to day is work with couples. I offer couples counseling and I also offer relationship counseling for individuals, as there's so many people that are seeking help with their relationship or maybe just their relationship skills. So I offer the individual relationship counseling option. And then lastly, I do personality coaching. And if you haven't worked it out yet, I'm obviously very passionate about personality typology, both Myers-Briggs and Enneagram. And I really enjoy working with people to first comprehend and understand their personality types, but then even more so how they can apply that knowledge and information to improve their relationship with themselves and find healing, but also to improve their relationships with others. That might be romantic relationships, but it might be in the workplace or it might be family relationships. So if you're in a time of need on that front, feel free to reach out. I do currently have some availability. I'm speaking from June 2023. You can easily book in for a free discovery call at danielanear.com. Or if you do have comments or questions or even suggestions for the Convergently Speaking podcast, feel free to shoot us an email, podcast@danielanear.com. So thanks for sticking with me to the end. I appreciate you being here and I appreciate your support. Also in the show notes, you can find links and information for Dr. Tracy if you're wanting to reach out to her or engage further with her work. We'll talk to you on the next Convergently Speaking podcast. Until then, stay curious.
furious.